Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA. It is Tuesday morning. Joining us from New Orleans, Louisiana, is Andrew Lopez.
504. How are you, sir?
504, boy.
There we go.
We had this special 330 pod last week with me and CJ McCollum. This is Louisiana podcast. That's Anscape's Mark J. Spears. He's in Oakland, but his heart is always in Louisiana.
That's right. I got some, I brought some gumbo home from New Orleans last week, put it in the suitcase. My wife was having a fit.
You better have sealed that sucker up because that could have been
a disaster. No, it was frozen. It was good. And right. It tasted real good too. And I got some PJs. Shout out to PJs Coffee. Made some PJs Coffee this morning.
Very
helpful at PJs Coffee too. Making sure
I heard there are fans of you at PJs Coffee. That's the word out there. You were trying to get King Cake Coffee.
Yes.
The King Cake thing in New Orleans is I had to learn about that when I first started going to New Orleans about 15, 18 years ago. Well, not longer than that, 20 years ago.
You like it?
I like it, but I mean, I'd never heard of it. I was completely foreign to me when I went down there. And the King Cake baby, it's very upsetting. It's very, very upsetting.
You're talking about the mascot, or are you talking about the actual in the
no,
cake?
That,
the actual mascot.
Yeah, both.
It's a very upsetting mascot. Do you think I'm out of line, Lopez?
No.
I can see how it could be very upsetting. What I would like to see them do, I've said this, I think, on Zach's pod, I would like to see them take King Cake Baby and the original Pierre, like the red-beaked Pierre that scared children, that they had to have like emergency surgery to fix him in the middle of the season, to this new fan-friendly Pierre. Just bring them out for like a Halloween game every year. Like, just go find that suit, bring them out for Halloween every year.
But you know, I had Brian. I still have. And I'm mad that I didn't get buy a jersey. What was the name of the minor league baseball team? King Cake?
Oh, the Baby Cakes.
It's the Baby Cakes. I still got one of their hats.
That was, I will say this. The marketing around that, horrible. The actual logos and merchandise, fantastic.
See, Lopez doesn't remember this, but I dragged him into a Baby Cakes gift shop after a Pelicans practice one time. Get some swag. Sorry, we could talk
about
New
Orleans. You guys can go on all day. good luck to the Tigers this weekend.
Right? I'm going.
I bet you would like that.
I knew you would be.
I was hurting last week, man. that hurt me, man. The Texas A&M thing. But you know, we ain't got nothing to lose, right? And it's at 4 o'clock, so if it gets bad, then I could just, you know,
excuse yourself.
At my boy, I'm going with Eddie Kennison. I don't know if you remember meeting Eddie Kennison there. Mm-hmm. Remember Eddie Kennison? Played for the Chiefs. Played a little bit for the Saints, LSU wide receiver star, friend of mine. Big wine aficionado, and he said, "Yeah, bro, if it gets bad, we'll find a wine bar in Atlanta somewhere."
That's, there you go.
That sound good to me.
Well, the Pelicans have won 6 of their last 8 games. They had a win over the Thunder on Monday night. Yeah, and 6 of 8, even though poor CJ, you know, this pod has been known to take some people down. But CJ did the pod and, like, immediately went into protocols. Like, left the crossover pod that we did and said, I'm in the protocol. He seemed fine on the pod. He didn't seem like he was sick. But
I had lunch with him 2 weeks ago, too. I was looking at the dates.
Had a double check.
He did not seem sick on the pod, but he hasn't been seen since. So I hope CJ's feeling better.
Nah, man. Great man.
Yeah, but without CJ, they've continued to win. And if I'm correct, Lopez, they're in a friendly portion of schedule. They've got 7 out of 8 games at home, which in the end of it, in about a week, a little over a week or something, they have a baseball series against the Suns, 2 games with the Suns in a rematch of the last year's playoffs. I don't know whether Chris Paul will be back for that, because the Suns aren't being honest with Chris Paul's injury. But whatever, they seem to get away with it. Nobody cares, apparently. And hopefully the Pelicans will have CJ back and ready to go for that. But they're in a good portion of their schedule, and they're playing well. Zion had a good game, 8 rebounds and 8 assists on Monday night. That's a good, well-rounded game for him. Lopez, what's been, you know, the Pelicans were kind of underachieving there for a while. They were hovering around 500. What's made the difference that's gotten them up in the standings here with these with this last couple of good weeks of play?
Honestly, it's been home games. They started their schedule this year 8 out of 11 on the road. It was just a brutal schedule to start. So you mentioned that they're in this good stretch right here with 6 of 7 at home. The one road game is at San Antonio, not on a back-to-back. You get to go, you travel, you rest, do all that. And they've done a lot of this, you know.
They just were in San Antonio like a few days ago. Yeah.
They were.
That's where CJ got sick.
Day before Thanksgiving, and now they're going back to San Antonio, and they're done with their San Antonio trips for the year. But for what you've seen is they've kind of got going against teams you should be beating if you want to be, you know, a top four team in the West, which is their goal, which is the way where they want to be. And they've done a lot of it with guys being in and out of the lineup. They played 20 games so far. They're 12-8. They are 6-2 in games that CJ, Brandon Ingram, and Zion Williamson are able to finish. They've only been able to finish 8 of 20 games with those three. 7-3 in the games that B.I. and Z have finished. Brandon's gone out of two games that they end up losing because of injuries. Z has kind of got injured in two games and kind of finished it. Well, he didn't finish the Utah game either. But despite that, you're 12-8. You know, you're looking, you're obviously close to the top of the West standings. You're 6th in offense. You're 5th in defense, which I think is what if maybe nobody thought.
Stunner. That's a stunner, man.
I think we were, you know, talking if they could just be league average, you know, you had high expectations for what they could do. And the fact that they're 5th has been great. And I, you know what, we can talk about a lot of his defense, but Zion's defense in the last 3 or 4 games has been better than what I think the average fan would expect. He had the 3 blocks against the Thunder.
You remember a couple of weeks ago, he asked for a grade. Like somebody asked him to grade his defense, and then he said, no, media, you grade my defense. He was kind of being a little condescending, but let's just grade Zion's defense after every game, right? Why not?
So
let's not grade the Jeremy Grant play.
Yeah, that one, take that one out. That's the outlier. you just scratched that one.
Yeah. But,
so that kind of started where, because we had been asking him about his defense a lot, because after the Brooklyn game, we asked him, hey, how did you feel on that end? This is the season opener. And he's like, let me watch film and then ask me after the Charlotte game. So we asked him then. So, you know, we've asked him periodically, how do you feel about your defense? Like, how would you say? And I think he got a little tired of it. So he just starts to flip it. Last night he did it again, but I think he did that one completely in jest. Like he was in on that joke last night, but he has been better on that end. There's obviously been some, you know, some guards that have broken him down. Obviously, you know, Mark mentioned the Jeremy Grant play, not great, but overall the energy, especially since he's come back from this last foot contusion, I want to say the last 3 or 4 games, his energy level has been there. That San Antonio game we mentioned before Thanksgiving might have been the best first half I'd seen him play defensively since he's been in the league. He has just really stepped it up on that end. And I think the team as a whole know, anytime you ask Willie Green about Z's defense, he always goes back to Z's individual defense is part of our team defense. Well, team defense is 5th in the league right now, which again, I don't think anybody saw coming, maybe even inside that building that they would be number 5, but that has been kind of the way that they have started to stack these wins against, again, teams they should be beating.
So, Spears, you have a piece that came out today, meaning Wednesday, I guess. It's our tomorrow, but it'll be when this pod comes out, about Herb Jones, one of the more fascinating young players in the league. tell us about what you learned about Herb Jones and when you were working on this piece.
Well, first of all, I've been fascinated with him defensively, which kind of like drew my attraction to wanting to talk to him when I was in New Orleans. I mean, defensively, those blocks that he's become famous for, blocking 3-point shots. Their game on Monday, he just had a couple incredible defensive plays down the stretch. You know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is one of the top. He should be an all-star probably this season, right? One of the top scorers.
If he's not, there's going to be an investigation.
Yeah, he's one of the top scorers in this league. But, you know, he had to work to get past 30 because of Herb. You know, Herb slowed him down in the final minute, causing him into a turnover and to an offensive charge. And so I, you know, visit with the guy the other day, just wanted to talk about defense. And I think, you know, a little tip from Andrew over here about his eccentricism off the court, I guess. And that's the thing that I think makes the story sing, because this dude is definitely not your typical NBA player, man. And like, look, I come from the years of gaudiness, Allen yes. Iverson, Melo, Kenyon Martin, you know, all that.
Man. Not Herb Jones.
No, not Herb Jones. He drives to games in a 2018 Dodge Charger. It has about 65,000 miles on it. Has no interest in getting a new car until the wheels fall off of this one, right? This is an NBA player. He walks into the arena with no care in the world about the cameras, about the pictures for social media or television. And he goes by the saying, if it's free, it's me.
Yes.
So he wears.
Yeah, CJ McCollum on the pod last week talked about. We were talking about cryptocurrency, and he's like, I know who didn't buy any.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so he wears team issue sweats to the game. And this ain't Kuzma. This ain't Russell Westbrook. You know, this ain't Chris Paul, man. His stuff says Pelicans. And I'm like, well, why you wear that? He's like, it's free, and it's a 2-minute walk from my car to the locker room. And then once I go in the locker room, I'm going to change my clothes anyway. So yep. I might as well come in comfortable. He was a business major at the University of Alabama, and probably about my uncle, God rest his soul, from New Orleans. They called him Squeak because they said his pockets were so tight from money that they squeaked, right? I could call this dude Squeak, man. He don't spend no money. He didn't go on vacation. Larry Nance Jr. offered to pay for him to go to vacation. Because he kept seeing
had to get him out the gym,
and he declined. But his dad told him to take a rest, a 2-day vacation. So he went to a small town in Alabama that he's from, and he slept for a day, and then he and then he went fishing for a day, and then he drove back to New Orleans on the Charger. Like he just
didn't catch anything fishing either. He was very upset about that day.
Okay,
he probably didn't pay for bait. He probably just put the
put a stick with a hook on the back. But he just, you know, financially, he's like, I want to spend money on my children. That's what my money's for my children's education. I'm like, oh, how many kids you got? I don't have any kids yet. Yeah. Like, but I think that was his, like, kind of simple way of talking about how generational wealth is important to him. So he said, if my brother, my mom, my dad, family, close friends need something, they know they could come to me. But otherwise, I ain't spending nothing. And then I asked him about social media, and he's like, this is the thing I think the NBA players and probably most people in general should listen to. He's like, I post some pictures that the team gives me. It's typically basketball related. He had some J. Cole stuff he posts from time to time on Twitter, or he talks about his dog on Instagram. But he said, if you could get succumbed or by social media, and it just ruins you mentally. It's like, because you start reading what everybody has to say, and you act like you can glance at it, but he's like, you can't glance at it. At some point it's going to catch you, and it's only going to bring negativity. So said he doesn't spend any time on social media, man. So he sounds like the dude just fishes, plays video games. That's like, last thing I said is like, hey, the owner of your team owns one of the biggest Mercedes dealerships in greater New Orleans, like in the And I'm like, I'm sure she could get you a discount on a Mercedes. She drives one of the most beautiful Maybachs into the arena.
Okay. Let me just, it's a 30-second timeout. Yeah. It is a gorgeous car.
It is a gorgeous car. Can you explain it to the listeners, Brian, what we're talking about?
So, you know, many arenas in the NBA are below ground. You know, you've been in many arenas, probably, if you're listening. You go in, you go down. The Pelicans Arena, the Smoothie King Center, is at street level because, you know, I don't know if you heard, but sometimes New Orleans can't gets go a little down. Water. Gets a little water in there. No, I don't want to bring up any bad memories, all right? But so as a result, like when you walk in off the street, you walk straight into the where the court is. So Mrs. Benson, she is not Gail. She is Mrs. Benson.
Mrs. Benson.
You know how that goes.
Yes,
she has a special parking place.
Yeah,
she has a parking place in the arena, and I mean, like, how close is it to the court, Andrew?
Oh, it's loading dock.
Oh, it's like in a loading dock. It's
like the loading dock is like sort of the outer
outer. Yeah, yeah. They open the door at the loading dock, and she drives.
Yeah, she is like the buses are outside because there's no room to put buses in the arena, and then she just pulls in right behind the buses.
Well, she don't pull in. Well, she is,
you're right.
She has a driver. Well,
she's never driven that car.
Respectfully said. It is some sort of super gorgeous high-end Maybach, and it is always beautifully waxed. There's not a speck of dirt on
it. No, I don't care what kind of rain is outside.
Her hair is perfect.
Clothes.
Right? What is she? Is she's wearing? I don't want to insult. She's wearing.
I think
Chanel.
She gets her clothes made. Like, probably.
No.
Like,
there's no question about that. It is.
Yeah.
But she is.
She's probably the most spectacularly dressed owner in sports.
She is. Yes.
Not flamboyant. Just elegant.
No. Elegant's the word.
Yeah, elegant.
But she could probably help him upgrade the 2018 Charger, which is your point.
and
there are many team issued Benzes around for execs and on both sides, Pels and Saints. If you know, there's lots of Benzes around, and no, Herb, that's just who Herb is, though. And that's who Herb's been. We saw Herb in, you mentioned him wearing the Pelicans gear all the time.
And
right?
slides,
always slides. I think he has to put shoes on when he sits on the bench, and he doesn't like it if he's not playing in the game. But he had a WNBA sweatshirt on once, and we're like, "Oh, you bought a WNBA sweatshirt?" And he's like, "No, when we went to the Philippines, he went to the Philippines as part of like NBA cares." He's like, "They were giving out NBA, giving out sweatshirts, so I took one of those, and so I wear that now. It's in my rotation."
His eyes, which have he's got a very sleepy eyes, very hairy, heavy eyelids. His eyes open. The only time they ever open is when he sees free gear.
Yeah,
and he gets very excited.
That when he can take a charge or throw the ball off of Poku's back to win a game, which is how he ended Monday night, taking a charge with 2.3 left on Shea, and then immediately coming back around and doing the throw the ball off the back of the defender trick when he's turned around on the inbounds play. I've never seen that play at a stage of the game.
Yeah.
Like that late in the game where it matters. I've always seen it like, oh, it's third quarter or second quarter, and you can steal an easy bucket under the goal. Never seen it.
Crazy basketball IQ.
At that point. By the way, he said last night or Monday night, he has never done that before. He had never attempted that in the game. He had never tried it in the game. He just saw Poku turn around and go, okay, I'm going to do this right now, and wins the game for the Pels, hits the two free throws right after. And seals the game.
He was guarding Shea Gildas-Alexander a lot on Monday. These are stats from NBA.com. Will Guillory of The Athletic tweeted him out, but NBA.com stats. Shea, as you know, has 15 30-point games this season. He leads the league in 30-point games, and he also had 30 on Monday night. Okay, but when Herb was guarding him, Shea was 2 of 9 from the field. Only scored 6 points, had 4 turnovers. 3 times Herb blocked his shot. And one of the things that Shea Gildas-Alexander does so well is get to the line, draws fouls. He's become so adept at that. That's one of the reasons he's gotten so efficient. He drew 9 fouls against the Pelicans, which is what he does. But Herb only fouled him twice.
Yeah.
And the thing about Herb, you know, he's 6'8", so he's got terrific NBA size. I went and looked. His wingspan measurement at the draft combine was 7 feet. Wow. So he's got 7-foot wingspan. Wow. Obviously plays very intelligently. And he's kind of ideally built to defend because he's got great length, but he's kind of built like Mikal Bridges, who's almost the ideal defender in the modern NBA. Tremendous length, but he's slight enough that he can get around screens, and he's just elusive defensively. He's hard to get in his way. He's not going to shut anybody down on the post, but the thing about it is, like, even if you try to take him in the post, his arms are so long, you're going to have a hard time shooting over him, even if you get into position. Now, the knock on him has always been, you know, he doesn't shoot the ball well. Last year, he shot the ball way better than I thought he would from 3-point range. He shot 35% from three. This year, he struggled a little bit, Andrew.
Yeah.
He's come back a little bit, but still. Yeah.
He's made a three in each of the last three games. So he's
To come back around. It's starting to come back around, but that was one of the reasons that he was able to get into the starting lineup last year. Here's the funny thing about Herb. Summer League, his rookie season, he wasn't even a starter on that Summer League team. Neither was Jose Alvarado, by the way.
Who was the coach?
It was Willie coached that team.
Oh.
Willie was the coach on that team. Willie was going to coach. Teresa was going to coach a couple games. And what they would do was the original plan, at least in Summer League, was Herb was going to be like this switchy five kind of guy. Like, he was going to be their Draymond-esque kind of, just let me, you know, you can guard anything. And then he gets to Nashville, where they had pre-camp.
They had evacuated due to the hurricane.
They evacuated due to Hurricane Ida. There was no power in the city for a little bit. So they had pre-camp in Nashville. And he just started shutting everybody down. And you heard whispers then, like, no, Herb's going to come out and he's going to play. And you're like, with whose minutes? Like, who's he going to lose? And I think it was maybe Josh Hart gets hurt in the first game of the year. Mm. And all of a sudden, game two, it's like, all right, Herb, by the way, you got to go guard Zach LaVine tonight. And he just kept his spot ever since then. And the shot has started to come back around this year. He's obviously now wasn't even listed as a forward on the All-NBA defense ballot last year. He's, you know, been he, but he'll guard obviously the best guy every night. And it's something that Herb relishes. And I mean, he does things. I've seen Herb block 3-pointers over screens or through screen. Like, contact is still there from the screen, and he's blocking the 3-point shot. There was a play last night that he had against Shea, where he jumps, Shea gets him with the pump, and he's able to get back up and block Shea's shot after getting caught with the pump. I mean, it was just a ridiculous play by Herb. I mean, he is one of the reasons they are able to do what they do defensively, and have, you know, and be fifth in the league. It's a lot of it is centered around him. Obviously, a lot of it is team defense, but when you have a guy like that, it does make things a heck of a lot easier.
And he, I did ask him, I said, what made you fall in love with defense? And he said it started when he was a kid playing one-on-one. Like, he didn't want to lose one-on-one games. So he figured, if I shut somebody down from scoring playing one-on-one, I'll get a basket or two. The baskets I need to win. And so it was at that point that he, you know, during his youth, that he fell in love with defense. And he's like, his aspirations are to make the all defensive team this year. And
he has
hidden numbers that you probably, it's not like he's going to lead the league in blocks, or maybe not lead the league in steals, but like, a lot of stuff that he does misses stats. You know what I mean? And so, but those that know hoop know that he's a monster defensively.
By the way, he does make double the league minimum. When the Pelicans drafted him, they did not give him the minimum as some second round picks get. Some second round picks these days, he was the 35th pick, so he would not have gotten the minimum probably anyway, but he got 3 years. He got
guaranteed money too.
Yeah, he got 2 years and 3.4. He's making
1.7 this year.
He's making 1.7. He got three. He got 2 years and 3.5 guaranteed. And I think I can comfortably say the team is going to pick up their option on him for next year.
Yeah. What does a guy like that make, Brian? Like, come free agency time, is he? I assume he'll be restricted. Like,
yeah, he won't be a free agent until 24, but. He's worried about establishing generational wealth. If he stays on this path, he will have generational wealth.
Yeah. But the cap, like, is, it's not like he's not under the rookie. Is he under the rookie scale in terms of extension? Or I'm kind of confused on what somebody like that makes, second round.
Yeah. Guy. So kind of good news, bad news when you're a second round pick. If you're a second round pick, obviously you're not going to have guaranteed money. And you're also, you know, going to get less than the higher picks if you do sign, but your contracts are often shorter. So if you are good as a second round pick, you will get paid faster. So if he'd been a first round, let's say he was the 30th pick instead of the 35th pick, he would have also had $2 million guaranteed or 2 years guaranteed like he does now, but he's only got a 3-year contract. Whereas the 30th pick in that draft has a 4-year contract. So he's in position. I mean, he's still got a handle his business for the next year and a half, but he's in position to actually start making real money in his fourth season. And so, you know, I have no idea what the market will be, you know, in 2024, but a player of this level of defense, even though he's not a great shooter, even if he can get himself back to average shooting, I mean, he is looking at a, without question in my mind, I don't even think this is controversial, he's looking at an 8-figure per year payday.
Wow.
So, you know, he will be, I would assume, at the very least the mid-level, and I would guess almost certainly above it based on, I just don't want to get locked in and all of a sudden I've said something and it's attributed to me. But he's, you know, assuming health and assuming he stays on this path, he's going to be a very wealthy man. And if he wants to drive the Judge Charger and keep wearing the team
issued gear. Yeah.
That's fine, but he will have tens of millions in the bank doing so. So let's put it this way. If you could buy stock, remember how Spencer Dinwiddie tried to sell stock in his future and it didn't really work out? If Herb Jones did offer that, which he won't, you should buy. That would be the best way I could say it. So something interesting happened last night in this game. Lopez, Dyson Daniels, who's the rookie lottery pick that the first piece that the I would say it's the first piece because they are Brandon Ingram, but the first draft piece that they have from the Lakers from the Anthony Davis trade is Dyson Daniels, the guy that they drafted in the, what was he, ninth, eighth last year?
He's eighth overall.
Hey, listen to the CJ McCollum Show, where every week New Orleans Pelicans star CJ McCollum discusses names and storylines in and around the NBA with inside perspective you can only get from someone in the locker room and on the floor. That's the CJ McCollum Show. Listen wherever you are listening to this podcast. Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. rookie from Australia who was in the G League Ignite last year. He played up against Josh Giddey, who's the second year with the Thunder. That was somewhat of an interesting moment in the NBA. I wondered if you could tell us why.
Yeah, so last night with those two guys facing off, it was the first time that NBA Global Academy teammates had played against each other in an NBA game. Earlier this year, I think it was Daniels and Ben Mathurin had played against each other. Mathurin, who is from Canada, played at the NBA Academy in Mexico, the Latin America Academy. So that was the first time that happened. This was the first time teammates had happened. But now you're starting to see all of these guys. The Academy started in 2016. And now you're starting to see these players make it to the league and be able to play against each other. The Academy program, it's four different academies: Australia, India, Mexico, and then Senegal.
It used to be three in China, but they don't want you to mention that. But there did used to be three in China.
So
produce nothing.
These guys have I think the Global Academy Championship playing with each other. They have obviously had a lot of experience. The two Australian guys. And so last night being able to do that just kind of showed where this program has grown so quickly that, I mean, Giddey was a top pick. Dyson's a top pick. We see what Ben's doing in Indiana right now. Obviously, you know, all those guys had kind of different paths to the NBA. You know, Dyson did G League. Obviously, Ben was, you know, in college. But all of these guys kind of starting to come out of this has been you know, I think a proud moment for the Academy.
Yeah. Spears, you spent some time with the Basketball Africa League, the BAL, which is going on right now, or maybe it just wrapped up. But so the Academy, the NBA Academies are starting to produce some fruit in the league.
Yeah.
And I've already been told the next Australian, I was talking to International Scout, and I was told the next Australian to watch who's at the Academy now is a 16-year-old who's 7'1", named Rocco Zakarski.
Great basketball name.
It's a great sport name, right? Rocco Zakarski. Doesn't sound like an Australian, but
you tell me, you told me Rocco Zakarski. I think he's like a middle linebacker from like the 50s.
Yeah.
Right. It sounds like it. And I can't believe I'm talking about a guy, prospect. I'm no Jonathan Givony, but I'm talking about a guy who was born in 2006, which was my fourth year covering the NBA.
Jesus Christ.
Covering the NBA. He's the guy at the Academy in Australia now, which is known as the Center for Excellence, I believe, or Institute of Sport, AIS, Australian Institute of Sport. His Center for Excellence is his team. But I've been told to keep an eye on him. But speaking of Africa, Spears, the African Academy, I have been told, so they had a Basketball Without Borders last year in Cairo, Egypt. And there were some NBA folks who went over there. Steve Kerr, who's the U.S. national team coach now, was there, and a bunch of NBA folks were there. And coming out of there, there was a young man, I believe he's 17, maybe he turned 18, Thierry Darlan or Darlan, I don't know how you pronounce it, Thierry Darlan. Again, I'm no Givony. And he's 6'6", shooting guard, who a lot of folks say at the Academy in Senegal, he's from South Africa, but he's the NBA Academy is in Dakar. And so one of the things that the Basketball Africa
League does. It's actually in Sally.
Oh, I'm sorry. How far is that from Dakar?
It's about 45 minutes.
Okay.
Drive. Well, roughly depends.
I understand
what's going on that day.
I understand. So the Basketball Africa League gets all their teams together, and I believe it was last week in Cape Town or Johannesburg. And the Academy League sends its team there. And, you know, the Academy players are in their teens, whereas the, you know, the Basketball Africa League guys are in their 20s. And a lot of them are in their late 20s. I mean, the Basketball Africa League – it is new as an NBA entity, but a lot of those teams previously existed. They were just sort of incorporated by the NBA. So some of them have players who've been there for years, and they have 28-year-olds, 30-year-olds. The point is, you put teenagers against, you know, grown men, it doesn't always go that well. Well, in this event last week in South Africa, I guess Darlan only was more impressive. So he's coming over to the G League showcase is in 3 weeks in Las Vegas, and they're bringing the African Academy players over to Las Vegas. And I suspect you might hear some more of it. So some more about him after all the scouts get to see him. So Spears, you and I share the belief that Africa is the frontier of the next wave of NBA stars. I mean, next wave, I mean, they're already here. Giannis is of African descent. I know he's Greek. Yeah. He's of African descent. Joel Embiid.
Yeah.
You know,
a lot Pascal of players. Siakam. Yeah.
And well, Pascal Siakam, if you know his story, like he was a soccer player until he was a teenager. Like, I don't know about there are more about more Joel Embiids out there, because that's a man of incredible athletic size, but there are more Pascal Siakams that have yet to be discovered in Africa that are coming. And here comes maybe another one now.
And so I went out there for the Basketball Africa League portion in Dakar, Senegal, in March of this year, and got to spend a lot of time with Roland Houston. Roland Houston is an American who coaches the players at the NBA Africa Academy, which is in Sali, which is a beach town in Senegal. Beautiful place. If you want to get to Africa and do an Africa starter kit, you could get to Senegal in 7 hours from JFK, which is something people should know. But anyways, what the Basketball Africa League did that was, I thought, cool and brilliant, and shout out to Amadou Fall, my former UDC teammate who runs it, is they had kids from the academy play on Basketball Africa League teams last season. And one kid that stood out was Boubacar Sané, who ended up getting a ton of interest. He played for Dakar's, Senegal's team. I think they're called REG. And got a ton of interest from colleges, American colleges, but ultimately he ended up signing with the Ignite. And so keep an eye on him. He's somebody that he can't go in the draft this year. He could go in 2024. But he is, you know, I talked to Gorgui Jing about him, probably the biggest name basketball out of Senegal. And
it's a gun of job, sir.
Yeah, my bad. Maktar would tell me different, right? He'd tell me he's the first Maktar. But anyways.
Yeah.
Gorgie's like, this kid is different than us, the bigs that I just mentioned. He's athletic. He's special. He's a small forward. He did well in the Basketball Africa League. So keep an eye on him. The one thing that's kind of funny and interesting was, Derrick Rose, through Gorgie, has been like really enamored with Senegal, doing things there. So this summer, he brought his AAU team from Chicago out to Senegal. And I think the kids might have been a little cocky, right? Like, Chicago boys, like, this is going to be some easy victories, right? So first, they brought them to the Seeds Academy, I believe, in Thiès, Senegal. And they got, like, one of the most great crackerjack gems you'll ever see, right? And these kids, man, It's basically a basketball school where Gorgui came from, and maybe Sana came from there too. But Derrick Rose's team got their butt kicked, man, by this team, by Seed's team, and I heard that they were quiet afterwards, and then they went and played the NBA Academy, Africa Academy kids, and they got mopped up by them too. So I think it kind of like, whoa. Africa's coming, man. Like,
yeah. Look at Pascal Siakam, Joel Embiid, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
No resources, no teaching, no gyms, really, right?
And the NBA is investing there. And look, Victor Wembanyama, look, he's born and raised outside Paris, but his dad is former track star from the Congo, the Congolese. So he's of significant African descent as well. So, I mentioned earlier about how they had the academies in China and just couldn't develop the Chinese players. And after Yao, there was this belief that there would be this stream of giant Chinese players. And I've had long conversations with coaches in China about why that didn't happen. And I'm not going to go into it now, but there's no question about the ability of the Africans. And so,
and you know what they remind me of, Brian? Like now, and y'all correct me if I'm wrong, but the African-American NBA player coming into league now is seems a little different. That they're coming from more families that they're not first generation college students anymore. Sometimes they're second and third.
Most of them, a lot of them are second generation NBA families.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, how many sons do we got?
These
we
aren't
got
a the lot days of like, yeah, I mean, you see some guys that came through some tough environments, but the days of seeing the Kenyon Martins and Iversons and, you know, guys I grew up seeing, Melo, like their upbringings, it's not quite like that. There's a lot of fathers involved. This ain't, you know, there's a different, but those kids from Africa, they remind me of the kids from 20 years ago. We're like, yo, this is my way out. Either I could get an education or education and play in the NBA. Like, this is my chance. And they're so thirsty, so hungry, want it so bad. And I see a thirst there that I'm not saying that the younger American kids, black kids, aren't thirsty and hungry anymore. But I feel a thirstiness from the players coming from Africa that I remembered seeing in the NBA 20 years ago.
I think it's just a different type of hunger. It's a different type of
like
want
a boxer hunger.
It's just a, like you kind of said, like there's the this is the path out. This is, I can, going back to Herb, like this is, I can create the generational wealth type situation and do so much more, even if it's just education, instead of, you know, even if I never step foot in the NBA. If, you know, a college takes me and that's a 4-year degree wherever I'm at, you know, all of a sudden you see that there. And I see that for part of your point, though.
That's just great perspective.
The thirst to change your life out here is beautiful to see, man. It's really beautiful. You can see it in their eyes that they want this. Even if it's just meaning that it's going to take them to a free education, like, the poverty that you see with these kids, man, it's heartbreaking. But they see this basketball, you know, that's why I told Amadou, I said, you've built a bridge from Africa to the United States for these kids. You should always be proud of.
And, you know, obviously Masai Ujiri with his Giants of Africa program.
Maktar as well. The OGs of Africa basketball, man. What they're doing for the kids back home, unbelievable. You know, Luol Deng, you know, Gorgie, like it's beautiful to see.
Imagine getting everyone on your list the perfect gift while it's still November. Shop Tommy John's Cyber Monday sale right now and spread the joy of cozy. In Tommy John, you're that much more comfortable, so you can do everything better. Shop Tommy John's Cyber Monday sale and give the gift of comfort to everyone on your list, including yourself, with the new Tommy John underwear, loungewear, and pajamas. With over 18 million pairs sold, giving Tommy John has become a holiday tradition. 97% of women and men love getting a gift from Tommy John. That's why Tommy John doesn't just have customers, they've got fanatics. Celebrate softness season with the gift of new Tommy John underwear, loungewear, and pajamas. Every gift's backed by Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear or it's free guarantee. So shop Tommy John's Cyber Monday sale now. Get 33% off everything plus free shipping at TommyJohn.com/hoop It's one of Tommy John's biggest sales of the year. 33% off everything plus free shipping at TommyJohn.com/hoop. See site for details. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Before I appreciate that perspective. Before we go, I wanted to talk about one of the surprise teams that had a big performance early this week. And that's the Washington Wizards. We've not gotten to talk about the Wizards on the pod. They have been having an overachieving season. They actually had some news today. They have a new part owner, a billionaire, Jeffrey Skoll, who is one of the original founders of eBay, just bought a piece of the Wizards today. And it's interesting because there's a belief that Ted Leonsis, who their owner is, might be trying to buy the Washington Nationals. So just a little side note. But anyway, I got to say this about the Wizards. The Wizards might have a big three. Now, it's not, you know, LeBron, Wade, and Bosch, but don't look now, but Bradley Beal, Kyle Kuzma, and Kristaps Porzingis are putting up huge numbers. Huge numbers. And, you know, a lot of people, including me, have questioned why Bradley Beal has been so willing to stay invested there. And, like, they've made some trades in the last 2 years that have built this team up. Now, I don't know where they're going to be. I'm not, but they're 20 games in. They're over 500. They've had a little bit of a favorable schedule so far in that they've had three more home games than road games, but they've had injuries just like everybody else. And Beal has been on the shelf a couple of times, including he had another bout with COVID. Poor Bradley, like, he's constantly getting COVID. I think this is like the third time he's had it, at least. He missed the opportunity to go to Tokyo because he got COVID. But so Beal is having he's not having one of his best seasons scoring wise because he's got more help, quite frankly. He's averaging 24 points. He's flirting with 50-40-90. Because he's shooting 53% from the field, 38% from three, which we know he can shoot better. And he's shooting over 90% from the line. So he's having, efficiency-wise, one of the best years of his career. Kyle Kuzma has been red hot. And I've heard, like, some rumors, and I've talked to some executives about some teams, like, saying, oh, yeah, that, you know, they're trying to get Kuzma out of Washington. Various teams are trying to trade for Kuzma. I'm like, why? Why would Washington trade him? Kuzma is on a great contract. And he's producing at a very high level. Now, look, he kind of ebbs and flows, but we know he's got the ability to defend. He doesn't always do it, but we know he's got the ability to do it. He's averaging 20 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists, shooting 46% from the field, and he's extremely versatile. And frankly, as far as I know, he's a real likable guy in the locker room. He's a good guy to have on your roster.
Great guy.
His dress is a little bit strange, but look, what do you want me to say? I don't know.
I call it swag. He got swag.
No question.
He got
and
swag.
Then let's talk
different
about
swag, but he got swag.
It's different swag. Let's talk about Chris Porzingis. Chris Saps Porzingis has gone to Washington and been switched to center. That's the position that, you know, they tried to make him sort of a power forward a lot in Dallas. Obviously was disappointing there coming off the injuries. You're still worried about injuries, frankly. You're still worried about his knees. But he put up 41 on Monday night. He's averaging 21 points. He's having the best year of his career so far. He's averaging 21 points, shooting 47% from the field, averaging 8 rebounds, averaging, you know, almost 2 blocks a game. And, you know, they got a whole bunch of guys in their rotation who are really effective players. You know, Denny Avida has become a significant, a real defensive player, you know, like they had a nice draft pick with, they made a nice trade there to bring in Monty Morris, and he's had brought good stability to their team.
Barton.
Will Barton isn't actually playing that great, but
he'll break out of it, I'm sure.
But Corey Kispert, who was a draft pick last year, he's shooting 43% on threes.
Rui,
Rui is, you know, Rui's been up and down. He's, he was really away last year with a personal issue, and now he's got an ankle injury right now. And they've been without.
But they got some depth for once.
Yeah, and they've been without DeLon Wright, who has a bad hamstring injury, I think it's a hamstring injury. He's going to be out like a couple of months with that. But anyway, I just think Spears, the Wizards, like they got three guys playing at a really high level, and they're putting up victories here. And in the Eastern Conference, where you've got some teams underachieving, how about the Washington Wizards overachieving to this point?
You know, it's funny. I got some friends that are big Wizards fans. I told them they're the only two that I know. my cousin Hasib and my buddy Troy, but they like give me all these Wizards updates all the time, and they're so excited right now, and I'm excited for the Wizards too, man. It's I don't know if there is a big market team in the NBA that has had less success than them, and some would say maybe New York. I posed this question to him the other day. I said, yeah, but the Knicks had a very successful 90s. Right. And in terms of a big market team, like it would be great for an NBA for Washington to be something. And I know Bradley's been patient. Porzingis, I think he's always shown if he's healthy, he could be a problem. But to me, the key has been Kuzma, man. Like when Kuzma plays well, they win. And he's doing a little bit of everything. Except, you know, he might start selling chicken with Mambo sauce out there at the games pretty soon. You know?
He's not shooting the three great. He's taking a lot of them. He's not shooting it great. But, you know, maybe that's just room for improvement, I guess.
Yeah, he had 9 assists the other day. I mean, he's – I think that was the – you know, Lakers may be kicking themselves a little bit for that, that amongst other things. But
that's been revisited, yeah.
But, I'm really happy for Kuz that he's found a home at a place where he feels like appreciated. And I know the Wizards fans love him and his personality and game.
Yeah. They've, you know, the deal that they signed Beal to, you know, it was $250 million or whatever it was with a no trade clause. Like it really put them into a box where, you know, because if Beal does want to get traded at some point, he can control the trade. You know, if he doesn't want to get traded for 4 first round picks somewhere because the team he goes to will be hampered, he can say, I don't approve it. And it was a huge concession because with some of the injury things that Beal has had, you know, you're a little bit worried about that. You know, and the Wizards have been burned with big contracts in the past. They got burned with Gilbert Arenas' big contract. They got burned with John Wall's big contract. You know, I thought they would be hesitant. So, you know, they get themselves to a point where they are ready to give Beal the full max, which meant they weren't going to trade him. They had to come to that decision at some point last year. And I mean, like, you know, they didn't decide to give him the full max on July 1st. That decision was reached well before that. And to get that no trade clause was a huge thing. It's a huge thing that applies pressure to that franchise. And frankly, remarkable that Beal was able to get it, you know, his agent, Mark Bartlestein, negotiating that. But you know, Beal has done nothing but play in good faith for the Wizards. So I can understand why they felt like, I still wouldn't have given it if I were them, but it's easy for me to say that outside the negotiation, to be honest with you. But anyway, he got it. And so this team is under an amount of pressure to have success in the short term. And but the Westbrook trade, you know, Westbrook got them to the playoffs. And then Westbrook wanted to be out of there. Okay. He went to the Wizards and said, please trade me to the Lakers. They were not able to run an open auction. They were able to make a trade with one team. And Tommy Shepard, their general manager, smashed that trade out of the park. Yeah. Smashed
shout
it.
Shout out to Shep.
One of the all-time good guys in the NBA. And also probably the only NBA executive who lives on a horse farm.
Or to play college football.
Oh, good one. I don't know about that. Think about
that. He played a linebacker in New Mexico State.
Yeah, so, you know, Kuzma and Porzingis are two guys that he traded for after the Westbrook situation. Because, like, I don't think Beal and Westbrook were, like, a pairing that was headed to Eastern Conference Finals. But it was a pairing that it took them a year – took them that whole season to figure out how to play together. They did. They make it into the playoffs. They were one of the better teams in the back third of that season. They had some momentum, and Westbrook pulled the plug on. And it was a gift that Westbrook pulled the plug on it, to be honest with you. But what I don't think the Wizards were like looking to break that up. And you, there was a fear. A fear that Beal would walk after Westbrook asked out.
You think Washington's going to do something to kind of? Now they're feeling a little good, maybe get a little bit more depth or a little more.
Yeah, there's been some chatter about them looking at a guy like Jay Crowder. I'm pretty confident there's been some discussions between the Wizards and Suns. You know, that we've been talking about Jay Crowder now for 2 months. It's obvious that it's a hard trade to pull off. You know, the Wizards have a bunch of guys who make decent salaries on their roster that they can use in trades. I do think that I mentioned earlier, Denny Avdija, I'm mispronouncing it. I'm sorry. He's kind of proven that he can be like an effective defensive player. He's got really good size. I don't think he's ever going to be a star. I mean, he's a lottery pick. You hate to come to that terms, but I do think that I do think he's got some value. There are people in the league who like Rui Hachimura. He has not been the player that I thought he would be. I was really high on him, and the team was too. I remember, you know, when he first got there, like the team was really trying to engage a Japanese market because they thought he was going to be a star there. He hasn't really, but you know, he does have some value. So I think there's a possibility that they could bring in another veteran, particularly if they can get what everybody wants, which is one of those 3-and-D guys.
You think Phoenix might want Jay? I mean, might want Rui?
Well, Phoenix has been what Phoenix has been looking for in return for a Jay Crowder deal is a power forward. So you can look at the roster and you can identify that maybe Hachimura would be a guy, but they haven't made the deal yet. So, you know, there hasn't been a connection there. But just the fact that they would Denny Avdija, as Jackson, our producer, is telling me, I botched it twice. Denny Avdija, you could sort of make, you know, to be honest with you, if I was Phoenix, now again, this is me speaking, this is not what I've heard, to be clear, I'd be interested in Avdija. I am interested in what he can do defensively, but I haven't heard that. I just have heard that those two sides have talked. So, but yeah, so let's keep an eye on Washington. They're on the radar. And also want to point out, we don't know the results of the MRI that are going on this morning back in Minnesota. Carl Towns went down in Washington on Monday night. Hopefully good news later. I know Woj reported that the initial testing looked like he avoided serious injury, which I assume is code for they don't think it's the Achilles. Because if you saw the play, did you see the play, Spears?
Yeah.
Carl was running up the court and falls down and immediately turns around and looks for someone behind him.
Yeah.
And that is the textbook situation that you often see in an Achilles tear.
Yeah.
And so that's what you're super worried about when you see that. That's what every Timberwolves fan was worried about. So Woj reporting that they hope that he avoided serious injury. They didn't say this, but it implies that maybe they think that he avoided an Achilles tear and that maybe it's a calf strain, which, by the way, that's not good. No. A calf strain is an injury that can set you back weeks, if not months. Yeah. But if you're choosing between one or the other, it's pretty obvious. So hopefully by the time this pod comes out, there's positive news.
Hey, Brian, can I give you some respect, man? And this isn't a shameless plug for you or anything. Or maybe it is. But one thing I do like about this podcast is you talk about you don't talk about the obvious or the popular. You talk about what's relevant. So I don't know if this matters to you at all, but no, I like that, man. Like, ain't nobody else talking about the Wizards or the Pelicans or like.
but
I'm just saying it's like it's easy to talk Warriors. It's easy to talk Lakers all the time.
We did lead the pod that came out on Monday with the Lakers.
No, I get it.
I appreciate it. Look,
but I know you make an effort to talk about things that are should be talked about. So that's
well, we celebrate the entire NBA here. We try to celebrate the NBA because while there's a lot of focus on the league that is, you know, sort of fluff, and like I participate in that every day, but you know, there's a lot. There's 30 teams and there's a lot going. Every one of them have their own drama. So we try to talk about that.
We did just spend 30 minutes talking about Herb Jones. So
I know. And listen, the people that are still listening.
That just kind of tells you about this pod.
The people that are still listening on this pod through Pelicans talk and talk about African prospects and talk about the Wizards that have reached this to hear that compliment, they are the people who will appreciate it. Because a lot of people probably would have bailed out a long time ago. All right. Thanks to Jackson, our producer. Thanks to Bruce as well. Thank you, Mr. Lopez. Thank you, Mr. Spears. We will talk to you with the Tims on Friday.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.